Sportsnet 650, Vancouver.
You want me to think that you're wild?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. We'll get into the whiteboard in just a second here. Of course, very busy show today on a Wednesday with the crossover, Ryan Kessler, Jason Buchla in the last segment. So we'll wrap up here with the crossover. But people did not appreciate Drantz's Brad Marchand to the Vegas Golden Knights for a first round playoff matchup with the Canucks. Fantasy hockey spin there. This one comes in. Wow, thanks for that, Drantz. I was already having a crappy day. Somebody else threatening to projectile vomit at the grocery store if that were to happen. Don't rule it out. I think he's staying in Boston. I think much more likely is that they would be firing Jim Montgomery, given their struggles so far this year. But when Vegas is involved, you truly never know which direction things are going to go. All right, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can keep getting your texts in. We'll see. We'll do the whiteboard here, but we'll see if we might have some time to dive into the inbox as well before the end of the show. But without further ado, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, November 13th. We'll start with the headlines, which of course is the Canucks beat the Flames 3-1 at Rogers Arena last night. They bounce back after that ugly loss to the Oilers on Saturday with a win over a, yes, tired, playing a bunch of, you know, their what, fifth game in 8 days, back-to-back, something like that for the Flames. Canucks fell down at the very end of the first period, 1-0, but dominated the second period, and the game was never really in doubt in the final frame. Also, how about this? The Canucks now with the best points percentage in the Pacific Division. All of a sudden, they're 8-3-3 in 14 games. They have a 679 points percentage. That's just a hair ahead of where the Vegas Golden Knights are. They kind of caught the Golden Knights unexpectedly. I wasn't paying attention to that because they've been off to such a good start to the season, but all of a sudden now, Canucks first place, best points percentage in the Pacific Division. And again, it's one of the strange parts of this season that we've been talking about a lot, which is for all of the seeming ups and downs, and now they don't seem quite right, and obviously Pettersson is struggling, and even Miller hasn't been quite himself. We'll get to those two guys and their performance last night in just a second. Demp goes missing, Joshua hasn't played. You know, for all of the stuff that's felt a little bit off, there they are, 8-3-3. And you can ask questions about who they've done it against, the strength of schedule, all of that. But if this is your, they're kind of struggling and they're only picking up wins against a bad team stretch of the season, and you still have 19 points in 14 games, you've put yourself in a pretty good position for the remainder of the season. So that's the kind of big picture from last night, but diving into some of the individual performances as well. You know, we've talked about Lucker Mackey a little bit, but the two guys I want to focus on right now in the headline section are Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. And, you know, Drantz, I know you were saying to Buchla that maybe you felt people are getting a little bit ahead of themselves with the Elias Pettersson praise, right? And the, oh, he's so back conversation, all of that. I think there's something to that, but I also think it's indicative of just how low the floor of his performances were this season, that last night, even if you don't think it was a dominant performance or anything, which I think is totally fair, it was still a significant step forward based on what we've seen from him.
Yeah, I'm just not going to use the John Wick voice, you know, the like, oh yeah, I'm thinking I'm back just yet on Pettersson, because he had multiple points in consecutive games. Great to see. Trending better, certainly. looked a little more confident, but that juice, that imperious dominant form, the way that he just controls games as a two-way piece, you know, that's a different level. That's mm-hmm. that's where Pettersson is one of the best centermen in hockey. I believe that he can be that guy. In fact, I think he is that guy, flat out. And I don't think that was a performance that reflected that level. So I think more than anything, it's almost like a stop me if this shocks you, but almost more of like a definitional thing. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I thought he was really good, but not by his own standard.
I don't think anyone's putting that on his career highlight reel. No. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, remember that game, right? Like, you know, some of the 5-point efforts he's had or the games where he's clearly been the best player on the ice. But yeah, you use the word confidence and just the mentality. I felt like that was really the first time we saw an attacking mentality from Elias Pettersson, and not just the mentality, but the ability to execute it. That really the first time we've seen that consistently throughout a game this season. And that's a prerequisite for him to have that type of impact that you're having. You know what I mean?
For sure.
So I think that's important, that, okay, at least if he's showing these things, it sets up the possibility that he has one of those true dominant PD games sometime soon. And then I think we really start to get into the, oh, he's back conversation.
Yeah. And look, I think also what I'd sort of add to this is I do wonder if in our rush to praise Pettersson's performance, we're ignoring what I felt was JT Miller's best of the year.
Mm.
You know, like, I thought JT Miller was the reason, the number one reason why the Vancouver Canucks defeated the Calgary Flames last night. And while Miller's had more strong performances, more impactful performances, more clutch moments over the course of this season than certainly Pettersson has, I don't know that there's too many nights where I would have ranked JT Miller as like the number one reason why Vancouver won. To be totally honest with you, usually I'm ranking
Which, of course,
Quinn Hughes.
A huge part of that is Quinn Hughes and Kevin Lankinen to an extent as well,
yes.
Right?
But nonetheless, right? I mean, there's a level that this team, I think, has in it. One of the reasons why I've been impressed by their performance, despite the fact that, like, there have been some fitful inconsistencies across this entire campaign, has been the idea that, well, at some point, once things click into gear, once this team's power play starts cooking, once JT Miller, you know, is like able to play through some of what's ailed him over the first little mm-hmm. bit of the month, once Pettersson, you know, gets his sort of usual juice back, you know, the idea that this is already the number one team in the Pacific and there's this whole unscratched surface that they can still tap into, you know, that's exciting to me, right? From an analytical perspective. So with Miller, though, I think the way that we've really got to frame this is, you know, given where the conversation was around this player 2 years ago, the way that he seemed to embrace, like, hey, you're the veteran guy, the defensive minded center who's going to be deployed tonight in a way to insulate, you know, our recent top prospect, and he's making his NHL debut and you're gonna have to help protect him and build his confidence up and support him and make it work for Lekkerimäki. And I thought he nailed that, right? I think he nailed that with his post-game commentary praising Lekkerimäki.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way that him and Pew Suter were able to play a simplified game and just dominate their shifts along the wall, I thought helped insulate Lekkerimäki, put him in a position to succeed. You know, he took that shot off the nuts in the first period, didn't miss a shift. I don't know about you, man, but if I took a NHL point shot off the nuts, like, that'd be it. I'm going home. So mad respect, mad props to JT Miller on that. And then, look, it was, you know, his pass on the power play that took a can opener to the Flames penalty kill and tied the game up. And then that shift leading to the Pew Suter goal. I mean, how many chances
Dominant.
Did they have?
Yeah.
Dominant. Withering persistence from that line. And it's actually as everyone else goes to make a partial change, both defenders and Lekkerimäki go to change, and Miller is still just protecting the puck, not even moving.
No.
On the half wall, just using his like frame and puck control and intelligence, positional intelligence, to just protect the puck, rag the puck, as it were. Pew Suter walks down Main Street and he finds him with a perfect pass. Pew Suter makes no mistake on the finish. As Miller noted post game, quietly, he's leading our team in goals. I just thought it was a dominant showing and a really mature showing from a player who, you know, I think in the past when he's come under criticism, it's like nights like last night that really go a long way toward showing that a lot of that maybe was just talk, or showing that JT Miller's grown as a pro and a leader for this club.
Yeah, the context of getting the assignment to help Lekkomäki in his debut, too, I think is really important.
Yes.
There, right? And not only did he do that really well, right? And he got praised by Rick Tocchet after the game, and he's saying he was talking to him so much. He was helping to make him feel comfortable. You know, as you said, he had a lot of praise for Lekkomäki. Lekkomäki played well. JT Miller obviously trying to set him up for those shooting opportunities. So not only did he do that, but then he also played his best game of the season apart from that, right? So he did two things at a really, really high level. And, you know, your point about Pettersson, that was probably a good game, but not a, obviously not like a dominant vintage Pettersson game. That felt like a vintage Miller game, right? Where it's like,
yes,
he is dominant on the puck, passing, physical, all of it. That is what he can do at his peak.
I might suggest it was better than a vintage Miller game.
All right. Wow.
Like, honestly, it was like, this is the new, improved, mature version of JT Miller. This is the sort of performance where if JT Miller wasn't a good player, you know what I mean? Like, if he wasn't a sick playmaking centerman who can hold up in a matchup role at the top of the lineup and on, people would be like, yeah, but, you know, you can't put a price on what he brings to the team. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Now, granted, he'd probably be having to make like $5 million instead of $8 million for that conversation to be taken seriously. But he brought that stuff that if you weren't even good, people would talk
people
themselves
would
into.
Yeah.
But to do it,
he's also really
be
good.
Really good and be the number one reason the team won the game last night. We can't let that pass without comment.
Yeah, he was really good. And especially, I think, the other context of bouncing back after a poor performance and one where he was publicly critical of himself, right? And coming back and turning in that type of performance. I think that matters.
Although,
I think that's important.
Did you see his scrum last night? Because I asked him that specifically, like literally dressed it up like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he admitted that yes, but he's also like, it's also just game, like, you know, one game of 14, man. You know, like,
yeah.
So I thought he had it in the proper context, but I do think it mattered to him that he, you know, showed well. And look, he took over that game. I was just coming away from that game being like, I feel like we've spent a lot of time coming away from games where JT Miller didn't perform that well with the entire market singing his praises. And then he has that performance and everyone in the market's like, yeah, but Pettersson's back. And it's like, I don't understand. Am I watching the same stuff as everyone else?
It's such a great question.
I don't know.
No, it's because there's been such a hunger for good Pettersson games,
right?
In a way that's different than with JT Miller. Anyways, but I agree with you. He was really good. Lekkomäki makes his NHL debut. Looks pretty good. Gets some praise from Rick Tocchet after the game.
And I want to bring it up again. He is the first Canucks draft pick to play an NHL game for the team since 2019.
Yeah.
This team has not produced a single NHL game from a drafted player. You know, again, I brought it up since Judd Brackett departed the organization, which isn't me making a pointed point about Judd Brackett's departure so much as just like, that was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was like early on in the pandemic. So it's been a long time. And man, if Lekkomäki can provide useful depth to this Canucks team, I think that's essential. You're not going to hit that next level, in my view, as a club, if you're not getting guys like Lekkomäki and Volander to be Vancouver's answer to what Winnipeg has in Cole Perfetti or the Dallas Stars have at the moment in Wyatt Johnston and Logan Stankoven. Really nice debut for Lekkomäki.
Yeah, and that's the question then going forward, right? He passes this benchmark. He has the debut. I think it goes well, right? He does enough of what the coach wants to see from him. You know, talked about his defensive conscience after the game. That all bodes really well. And then the question is, okay, what does it look like in kind of both the short term here, while the Canucks do still have forwards out of the lineup? We'll see about Dakota Joshua, Brock Besser's status, all of that, and what it looks like for the remainder of the season. I guess the question is, you know, it's kind of that old top six, bottom six thing with a young, offensively talented player, right? Like, is there a spot for them in the top six? Do you want to play them in a bottom six role? The one thing I'll note about the way the Canucks are built right now is you look at the guys on the fourth line, right? And like Hoglander's playing down there right now. It's not as if it's this, you know, crash and bang guys with no offensive punch fourth line typically. And hey, like if Pugh Suter eventually moves away from the wing or something, he could be an option down there as well.
How dare you?
So I'm not so quick to write off, like to say top six or bust for Lekkomäki this season, because I do think there's an opportunity for the Canucks to get a little bit more creative than that and have a bottom six role for him where, hey, you're also playing on the power play. They can still get him credible minutes and he can help flesh out their depth scoring a little bit.
Yeah, that third line is flying, though.
You're not breaking up that third line.
It feels like it's going to be difficult to design something that's, you know, look, could there be a world where your third line is something like Lekkomäki with Suter and Joshua,
yeah,
right, and then that current third line becomes your fourth. That'd be nasty.
That'd be pretty good.
Probably need another body. Certainly need Besser back healthy.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, look, this team's got a lot of forward depth and a lot of options. Hoglander's minutes really didn't play very much. Think that's becoming a bit of a storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the effort was there from him. Like there were sequences where he was grinding and winning battles, but you know, that usage, I think, at this point is pretty disappointing, especially given where his game appeared to be trending like just a couple weeks ago when this team was on the road early on in the season and he was performing so well with Garland and Pettersson on you know, a line that I think for a moment anyway, we sort of had hopes of, you know, being a fixture for this team as sort of a top six combo to play under 10 minutes and to really see his role diminish as the game went on. I'm not going to say it's like something that I'm worried about just yet, but it's certainly something that you don't want to see given the commitment the club made to Hoglander before the season and all the progress that he seemed to show throughout training camp and in the early part of the regular season.
So I'll use that to transition into the broadsheet here. And this is more going to be just me pitching a question to you rather than a report from an insider or anything like that. But that point about Hoglander's minutes, and it comes up a lot in our inbox. Is he trending to trade bait status potentially? I mean, he signed that extension before the year, and it seemed to kind of take that out of consideration, but it also attaches cost certainty to a player who would have been a pending RFA otherwise. I mean, is it that type of his minutes are declining? And, you know, we've seen what's happened with forwards whose minutes have declined here in the past with the Canucks. Like, does that start to become a realistic conversation here with Hoglander?
I don't think so. You know, cap's going up. Besser is expiring,
mm-hmm.
right? In a world maybe where Besser is extended, is that something that we sort of look at a little bit differently? Maybe. I think the organization is extremely high on Nils Hoglander, all told. I think there was a very serious desire based on how impressive he was in the lead up to this campaign to get that deal done early. I think that reflects how high the organization is on him. He'd have a tremendous amount of value if he were to be shopped. There's a lot of teams that have a very, very high regard for what this player is capable of. So, you know, you never say never if the right, like, top six upgrade, the elusive top six upgrade, especially if it's a long-term fit, becomes available. But I think the Hoglander on the block talk is premature, probably. And, you know, also maybe betrays people not quite understanding the extent to which Hoglander is, you know, highly, highly regarded by a variety of key Canucks decision makers.
Lineup notes section of the whiteboard. No practice today. Team day off. They'll play Bo Horvat and the Islanders tomorrow at Rogers Arena. And going into that one, I think there's really two central lineup questions. Number one, will Dakota Joshua make his season debut? And I guess I say yes. The sub question to that is who comes out of the lineup.
I say Baines.
Yeah, I think Baines for sure. Hesitant.
Well, not for sure. It could be Lekkomäki.
Well, I don't mean like I'm guaranteeing it. I for sure agree.
Jamie's
with you.
Lock of the week.
Baines a scratch.
Jamie the Greek's lock of the week.
I mean, I for sure agree with you that it would be Baines, but you never know, I guess. Joshua, I'm a little more hesitant to say like one way or another. just because it has been kind of fits and starts, and obviously it's a unique, not typical hockey injury and all of that. I certainly hope it's the case. We've heard it referenced by Rick Tocchet and kind of lay out what the return to play plan would look like for Dakota Joshua. So that's one of the big lineup questions. And then the other one, of course, is who starts in net? Lankinen gets the chance to come back after the tough outing against Edmonton, plays really well, again, only gives up one goal, but there's the Shelovs thing kind of hanging over all of this as well, and the need for him to get games. I think it's probably Lankinen again, and they give Shelovs one of the back-to-backs on the weekend.
I will never bet against the Canucks
starting Kevin
Lankinen at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I think it makes sense to get Shelovs one of the games before the weekend, but I don't expect it at this point. I think Lankinen's just the dude.
Yeah, it seems like it, and it seems like Shelovs, if I had to bet right now, I'd bet on him getting one of the back-to-backs on the weekend, which is Chicago-Nashville Saturday and Sunday. Playoff and standings update, quick roundup from Dom's model at The Athletic. The Canucks still sitting very pretty, 97% chance to make the playoffs, projected to finish with 107 points. That's first in the Pacific Division, although the Edmonton Oilers very, very close behind in that projection. Also a 10% Stanley Cup chance. And by the way, this is not really specifically related to the Canucks, but just something that caught my eye looking at the projections today. It's wild how quickly the league starts to sort itself. And this is just Dom's model, right? So it's one model here, but 16 teams he has with a 72% chance or higher of making the playoffs. From 16 to 17, the drop is from 72 to 45.
Wild. Yeah.
Like, that's the same drop from 1 to 16.
Yep.
And so you're here, it's November 13th, and it's like, it's not maybe the most likely outcome, but if those 16 teams are the ones that made the playoffs, nobody would be surprised at all. It's wild that we're already there.
Yeah, usually we do get one.
You'll get a surprise here or there, you think.
One surprise gas job and one surprise come up, but yeah, I mean, a good start is important, and the Canucks have nailed for the second consecutive year the good start part of it. Gambling odds, two things I want to spotlight. The first is this, Stanley Cup outright market. So this is to win the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Oilers plus 750. They're the favorite at the moment, no surprise. The Jets and the Hurricanes come in next at plus 800. Panthers next, plus 900. Devils 10-1. Toronto Maple Leafs public team 11-1, Dallas Stars 11-1, New York Rangers 12-1, Avalanche 13-1. Now here's where it gets interesting: Canucks 15-1, Vegas 16-1, LA Kings 18-1. To what extent are the other Pacific Division teams' odds depressed
because of Edmonton?
By the fact that Edmonton exists in the Pacific Division.
To some extent, absolutely.
I think to a large extent.
Yeah.
The fact is that neither Vegas nor Vancouver, regardless of how they've been playing or how their form looks or what injury updates they get, neither has been able to like get above that mix of like 8 or 9, that like inner circle of contenders in the Stanley Cup odds. And I think largely it's because there's, you know, the betting markets believe that there's a nuke team in the Pacific Division. And unfortunately for the Canucks, it is not Vancouver. To win the division, the Canucks today, number one in the Pacific by what matters, which is point percentage. Remember this day, everybody, November 13th, 2024, the year that Vancouver fans accepted the primacy of point percentage. Plus 185, the Edmonton Oilers favored to win the Pacific. Vegas plus 240, Vancouver plus 240, LA plus 375. Those are the Pacific Division odds. Dom's model would suggest bye-bye-bye on the Vancouver Canucks.
That's the whiteboard for today. That's our show for today. Thanks for listening. Shout out to Ryan Kessler for joining us earlier as well. Really enjoyed that chat with Kessler. If you missed it, you can catch it up on the podcast. And we will be back tomorrow on a Canucks game day for more Canucks talk here on Sportsnet 650.